welcome to Level Up Community. How are you guys doing? Happy Wednesday. It is midweek. I hope you guys are having a fantastic day. You are healthy. All your dreams and aspirations is moving along. If you are feeling stuck on something that you're doing, take a break. Take a break and come and join our conversations. It's going to be full of inspiration, but I really want to pick Chris Rudin's brain today about speaking and inspiration, because to me, I've been following him for a bit here since Hounds of Business Community with Mike Escherbrenner's conversation, and just kind of seeing what he has done for himself, right? Like, all of us are full of excuses sometimes. And let's be honest, we are. We excuse ourselves for a lot of things because we can't do this, because of this, of this, of this. But at the end of the day, if you're intentional, if you are driven, if you just stop and think, okay, I really want to do this. How can I get somebody to help me? Because I feel like I've hit a wall. It's okay. But Chris is not even human. I feel like he's a machine. He just keeps going, guys. He just keeps going. I met my fellow machine. This is great. So I love it. And really what I want to extrapolate in this today is inspirational conversation. And so I hope you guys are ready. But first things first, I wanted to make sure that you guys know this magazine, Level Up Circle Magazine, is already out. I'm still deciding if I want to do a cover of a person on the cover of Level Up Circle Magazine, because I started with a cover for me with Beyond Boundaries. I think that's what I started. Let me look at the magazine. Yes, it did. I started with this magazine, okay, with my Beyond Boundaries, because this book went to not only Amazon, but 40,000 distributions around the world. So I started with that. And then, of course, I went with the heart-centered one, right? And then I have the transformational leader one, which is online and on ground. But now I've decided I want to do 2024 a close loop, right? A close loop, meaning maybe I want to put somebody in the front cover. I'm not sure yet. But I want it to be almost a manifestation, like your goals that you're setting. So I'm trying to figure that out. I want to title it definitely with 2025 in it, closing in 2024, but I just don't know what the title is yet. It's going to come to me. But I'm hoping that all the business leaders out there are thinking about what they're going to do and help the community for 2025. So I cannot wait for that. And I also, we have an upcoming book anthology. This will be our fourth one to close our year with my business partner, Susanna Dawn. This is the book. It's called Against the Grain, Finding Belonging in a World of Resistance, right? And that is the book cover. That is what the book cover looks like. And we have a couple of really amazing authors already. But we are closing that. Tomorrow is the last day to sign up with us. If you need more information, just go to SusannaDawnWriter.com and then click services, and you will find all the information that you need. There are two requirements of Zooms. One is this upcoming Saturday at 9 a.m. PST, and then one in the middle of November. And that one is actually a really amazing Zoom session for all of our writers. So let us know if you have any questions. DM us at any time. And then, of course, we have our podcast circuit meeting is once a month. We already had it on the 7th. So we're going to have that in November. I'm going to let you know if you're already on my email list. For Podcast Circuit, I do run it for free and also for pro and elite version of the podcast. So let me know and DM me if you wanted to be on the email list. All right. Oh, and that is the book. But are you guys ready? Are you guys ready for Chris Rudin? Okay, let me find my button, a drum roll. I swear I have a drum roll button here. I'm not taking up Chris without that. He deserves a drum roll. This brother from another mister is amazing. That's the longest drum roll ever.
I'm actually surprised you had the drum roll. I love that.
And you're like, is it done? Is it done? How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Oh, no, I appreciate you taking the time, being here, sharing your knowledge, and really inspirational is one word that encapsulates my heart when I've been following you and just kind of following what you're doing for the community and what you've been doing in your life, right? And this is a new live stream for you in terms of my network. You had your mic, but my people wanting to know, this is always the first question that I have. Not that one, this one. Think back 20 years ago and find within your timeline, you know, some of the significant changes in your life that got you here where you are today. So who is Chris Rudin?
This is going to be a 7-hour conversation if we went that far. 20 years ago, the 20 year ago version of me was just so lost. And people are like, oh, yeah, I understand that. But to explain that more, you know, I was born with a physical disability. I have two fingers on my left hand and a shorter left arm. I usually have a super cool prosthetic arm, but it is somewhere in my house. Who knows? I hid my disability for 20 years, almost 17-ish years, in a pocket, in a glove, in long sleeves, in hoodies. I just felt like a monster. So the majority of my life, if I went back 20 years, putting me around 14, 15 years old, I was in full survival mode. Mental health was just, how can we hide from the day? How can we hide from the people of today? How can I hide from myself? What can I do to just try and desperately be normal? Fast forward to where I am now. Normal is, I'm allergic to normal now. It's, I want the differences. I want people to see my arm. I want people to see my cool prosthetic arm. I don't want to fit in anymore because I feel like that's a disservice to who I am and who I can be. Now, being a speaker, a professional speaker, or a professional speaker coach, I'm fortunate enough to allow people to let their stories blossom instead of trying to hide them in a pocket or in a glove. So I've done a drastic turn, but it had to be the decision to accept who I was and who I could be, not based on what society says I am. That, I think, is one of the biggest things. Growing up, whether you're 10, 15 years old, you start to get labeled and put in boxes. Oh, you're the nerdy kid, so you can only work in gaming or tech. You know, oh, you're the pretty person, so you have to be a model. Or you're like, all of these labels that we get put on us and we kind of accept and we live our lives according to what we think we should do. And I always tell people, don't should all over yourself. You don't have to should yourself into a life you don't actually want. I should have just been a broken person. But I refused to accept that should or that label. And I asked myself out of curiosity, what might I be able to do differently than everyone else? And what might I be able to do that makes me happy instead of just falling in line? That's kind of set myself up for where I'm at now and where I'm going.
I love that. My aunt also have that issue. I don't know what it's called. My daughter's best friend also have that issue, but it's on the feet. Like they have like all the... like two toes really, or only one toe, but like the, instead of having five, it's like two in one. Right. And so she always made fun. So when she goes swimming, like we live in an island in the Philippines. So what do? You swim.
Yeah.
She would use shoes to swim and everyone always told her, why are you so weird? Like everyone is on her feet, but she's like, don't worry about it. And she said the worst thing is dating someone.
That was a big issue for me too, the hiding. And like the majority of my time I spent like where, when you would go on a date, you would think like, oh, where are we going to eat? What are we going to do? I would go on a date. I'm like, what am I going to wear to hide this? When I'm walking through the door, which way do I have to turn so that it doesn't seem like that? Which side of the seat do I have to sit on to hide that? I was over calculating every single decisions that most people don't have to think about. I thought about in hyperdrive, you know, in my situation, I was born technically with all my fingers, but they had to amputate and cut out the majority of the bones in my hand. So there are conditions like symbiodactyl and some other names for conditions where you're only born with a few fingers. I was technically born with all of them. And that's why you'll see on my profiles, I mentioned that I'm limb different, which is born with a limb difference, but also an amputee where I had to amputate the majority of the bones in my hand.
I can't even imagine, right? And, you know, so here you are, amazing human being. So let's talk fast forward to today. Yeah. What does Chris Rudin do? I know you just had your book. I want to know, like, how did you go, I'm worried about this. And you're like, you know what? Forget you. I got mad skills. I'm going to use my mad skills. I'm going to inspire people. I'm going to be a speaker. I'm going to be a writer. When did that transformation kind of go into hyperdrive?
So I would almost say part of it is I'm fortunate that I took it as an opportunity to be competitive with myself and with society. I wouldn't say it was out of the best mental health decision in the first place, but sometimes if you're already in a hard place, don't make it worse. You know, if you have a flat tire, don't set the car on fire. For me, I was already struggling with mental health. I was like, okay, I'm struggling right now. And I accept that I am struggling, but what can I do to make this better? Or like, honestly, what can I do to make this suck less, you know? And I was like, I love lifting weights, you know, because I was told I couldn't. So I found a way to lift weights and I started pursuing a career in exercise science. And I was like, wow, a lot of people need help figuring out how to adapt to machines and adapt to workouts. That turned into a really successful training business where I had hundreds of clients all around the world. But that started from helping people solve problems. And that's the unifying theme. And what I found is I had problems that I wanted to solve, but in solving my own problems, I found that I was solving problems for other people. So I started solving problems for other people. And that same concept applied to my training career. It applied to my speaking career, to my speaker coaching career, and then to becoming an author and helping people solve problems around the world. So I clung to that philosophy of how can I help people solve the problems that sometimes they're not even willing to face? And I took that on as a career. So yes, in the meantime, I lifted weights and I broke a world record in powerlifting against non-disabled people, deadlifting 675 pounds with one hand. I was in a bunch of magazines and a TV show with The Rock and a lot of cool stuff on paper. But to me, by far, the coolest thing is being able to talk with someone genuinely and say like, hey, I see that struggle that you don't really want to acknowledge and I'm here. You know, I'm here to help you through it and I'm here to help you get past it by focusing on what you find fulfillment in, because everyone finds fulfillment in something. At a certain point, you know what you like, or you at least know what you don't like. Sometimes just listening is the biggest superpower.
Yeah. I think people often want to be valued, heard, and seen because they've been put out for a long time, that they're so eager beaver to be, you know, in front of the limelight. Yeah. But once you have that limelight and all the attention is in you and you have that one opportunity, you freeze. I've seen it. Mm-hmm. Or I've seen it too, where people step up to the plate and they have nothing to say because they weren't listening. Right. And that's where I want to transition the conversation about the speaking, because I have a lot of friends who wants to be in speaking gig. I have been doing speaking for universities as a keynote speaker, and because I have a vast background in academia, but I also am beginning to start also doing speaking in terms of marketing. I really love neuromarketing and psychology mixed into marketing and things like that for branding and authority, but I don't like to live in the theory world because academics usually are into theory. Yeah. I love theory and action at the same time. So I wanted to ask you this question. Let's see here. This one. How do you adapt your message to connect with diverse audience or those facing unique challenges when it comes to, let's say that, what was your last speaking gig? Like, how did you manage to say, hey, I'm going to do this speaking gig? Did you do the marketing first of that, or people just know you from the marketing, or how did you be, you know, transition from doing the workout to being a speaker?
So I also have type 1 diabetes, which is an autoimmune disease. And that is what led me to get started in speaking. I spoke at a nonprofit event, my first event ever, probably 8 or 9 years ago. And I spoke for free and I loved it. Everyone seemed to love it too, but I knew I could do better. So I was like, there's no way I'm going to do that again without practicing, without learning, without honing that craft. Cause I feel like it's almost disrespectful to do something that you're not putting effort into, you know, even if you are naturally good at something, you owe the respect to yourself and to the people watching you or consuming your product or service to continually get better for them and for you. So I spent that time falling in love with the art and science of storytelling and why stories matter and how messaging matters and how to package that in a way that resonates with people and goes from just informative to impactful. So I fell in love with that. And to me, it really starts with questions. I know what I speak on. I speak on three main topics: overcoming adversity, change management, and disability inclusion. Those are my three wheelhouses. When someone comes to me, it's usually in one of those three wheelhouses. If it's not and it doesn't apply to me, I won't speak for them because I know my space. I know the lane that I'm in. If it is in my space, I'm not going to assume that I have the answers for them. I'm going to ask them questions. So business advice here for any potential speakers: do not assume that you know everything. Ask questions, find out what they need. And on my discovery call with these clients, whether they're corporations or associations or even universities, I will ask, what's the biggest takeaway you want your audience to walk away with? What's that one or two things that you feel like the audience that's coming to this event needs to know, needs to hear, and needs to start implementing? They are going to tell me exactly what the real issues are. Yes, they want to hear the story that's inspirational and motivational, but if we take inspiration a few steps deeper to impact and transformation, that will only happen when we're solving the real issues, when we go to the root cause of what is going on. So that's how I apply it to diverse audiences. In my discovery calls, I get as much information as I can on how I can help these people, and then I apply it accordingly. My kind of rule is I should be able to speak to everyone in the audience, whether the person has had this issue for years, this person has never had the issue, or the person has had the issue but no longer has the issue. Those three target audiences for me allow me to tell stories and create messages in a way that applies to everyone. Whether I'm future-proofing you for this problem, I'm helping you actively through it, or I'm relating to you because you know exactly what I'm talking about. That's what I do as a speaker.
I love that you'll say that I'm staying in my own lane, because I think a lot of people goes, oh, I can do that. And then when you see them speak, there was no meat.
There's no connection. And I'm gonna say the big thing I say to all my speakers when they say that exact thing: just because you can doesn't mean you should. that applies for so many things. You can give away your time. You can work for less money. You can do all these things, but just because you can doesn't mean you should. Great life advice.
I am so thankful you said that, because I always say that. I'm like, just because you can, you shouldn't have to do that, because, you know, and I think that's, it goes back to the, I want to be seen. I want to be heard. I want to have value. I think people take that to heart and not look at and back out. Like, there are ways that you can do that and stop going on other people's lane if you really, truly don't know the topic. So I just wanted to say hello to YouTube. We just hit 870, I think. So thank you, YouTube, for showing up. I have friends all over the world watching us. I told them, I'm like, Chris Rudin's going to be there. Why wouldn't you? Right? Here's my other question. What has been your biggest source of strength during your journey with being a speaker?
I really think it is, I'm gonna say, in part, learning stoicism, which is a type of philosophy that helps you domesticate emotion. It doesn't mean get rid of emotion. Domesticate it so that it doesn't run your life. There are a lot of emotions when you start a business, whether it's speaking or any business. And a lot of it is that creeping doubt. It's like, oh, this is terrible. This sucks. This isn't going as fast as it should be. It's not working. It's never going to work. All of that doubt creeping in your mind. Being able to isolate that and say, hey, I understand that's a fear-based response, but I don't need that right now. So I'm going to choose to think differently. It's very hard. Easier said than done, absolutely, but better done than said. When you practice to just soften or quiet or even eliminate those voices or that creeping doubt, that noise, you can work. And it's one foot in front of the other over time. Not every step is going to be the step that crosses the finish line, but one of those steps will be. So who am I or who are you to not give yourself another step? Even if it's not the winning step, it's going to take another step and another step. It's overwhelming to think I will be happy when I hit $50,000 keynote. You know, that means every day I don't get a $50,000 keynote, I'm losing. Even if I get a $15,000 keynote or a $20,000 keynote, I'm still losing because I set such a goal that says anything beneath that goal is failure. What happens if instead we rewarded the process? I'm happy if I send out 10 emails today. I'm happy if I go to the gym today. I'm happy if I eat healthy today. I'm happy if I don't go to sleep, you know, feeling like garbage about myself. What happens if we accumulated more wins that together create an environment for success to get to that level? Yes. I think we remove the rewards that we need to actually initiate change and motivation along the way. So stop telling yourself, once I get to X, I'll be happy, and start saying, once I do the stuff that I'm going to do today, then I will feel proud. You know, make yourself proud. And that starts with the work, not just the finish line.
I love that. I am in the same mentality. When I wake up today, I'm like, okay, what makes me happy? Yesterday and today, I have the biggest migraine. It's one of those hormonal changes that I have, right? Like migraines. And I told my sister, I'm like, I'm going to look like crap today with Chris in the show. I feel like crap because, you know, all of that. But that's what I'm saying. When people need to show for you what makes you happy, and talking to somebody that I look up to makes me happy. So I have a win for today, for you being here today.
I appreciate you. And I appreciate that so much. And even speaking to that, I have those moments, you know, with diabetes, my blood sugar can change and that gives me crazy migraines or headaches or all of that. But it takes removing yourself, a step back and saying like, okay, what can I find in this space right now that I'm in that I can feel either a little bit of gratitude towards or even contentment? It doesn't need to be happiness, because not every moment of every day is going to feel like you climbed, you know, Mount Everest. Not every day is like, oh my God, I broke a world record. That's like peak happiness. We can't always be peak happiness. And some people are chasing that peak happiness, which is, it's futile. It's never going to happen. But if you can find contentment in the moment of a genuine conversation, my example is I have so many things I need to do in general, let alone this week or this month.
Yeah.
None of that matters right now, because I'm enjoying a conversation with a friend. And I'm enjoying a conversation with a friend about topics or tactics that I truly believe can help at least one person on this call, whether it's from speaking business or mindset or mental health. I truly believe in that. So that supersedes any sort of potential negative feeling that I could have today. For the moment being, I'm very content. And that's enough. And that's okay.
I love that. No, for me, I just push through. I'm always pushing through. You don't understand. I don't know if you have my background a little bit. So in 2011, I had ovarian cancer and I was told, oh, you have 6 months to live. Depression kicked in quite fast. My kids were little then. I have two children. I have two daughters. One is going to be 20. Oh my God, I'm an old mama. I keep saying when I soon as I say 20. One is 20 in November 27th during Thanksgiving. I ate too much turkey and I gave birth to her the next day, literally. And then of course one is going to be 17. That one's my sassy attitude one. Let me tell you something. When someone tells you you got an expiration date, like people goes, oh, I want to know when I die, because I could do that. You don't. You actually don't. It's like, it's just feeling like I felt like I removed myself out of my body at that point, like looking in, like, wow, this is it. This is all I've got done in my life. It's okay. Because then I will spend the rest of my time in the next 6 months with my kids. But when you're given another lease of life, that was 2011, Chris, right? So for me, like, all of these things that most people want, material things, all of these things. I've already had that. For me, I live every day looking for two things only: happiness and peace of mind. Happiness and peace of mind. That's it. The rest of them, it doesn't really matter, because at the end of the day, I was at that moment where I could have died. And that was the 8 times that I almost died in my life. So I'm like, okay, what is my purpose again? It took me, you know, 10 more years to figure that out, which is inspiring people to be the best that they can be, talking about stories that people would never hear about their stories, and just being a human being. It doesn't have to be you have to be this and you have to be that, right? So I love that. Now, when you are doing your speaking, how do you approach topics that may be difficult or emotional for your audience, right? My uncle died of type 2 diabetes, right? And it's sometimes you might have a spouse who just lost a spouse, right? And what role does empathy play in your presentation when it comes to sensitive topics like that? Like when you share, hey, I had type 2 diabetes and this might be my conversation and how I use exercise and, you know, having competition with myself and I got here today, how do you handle that approach?
So I'll give you a general response and then a specific response of an incident that just popped up into my head. Generally speaking, I lead with authenticity and empathy, which is why the way I do my speeches, I have bullet points and I know those bullet points, but I trust myself enough to deliver authentically. That way that it's more of a conversation to the audience instead of a performance. Now, I'm practiced in the way that I understand how to pause or how to create, you know, different rhythms or tonalities to elicit certain responses. Yeah, but the conversation goes where the conversation goes, given where I think it needs to. So I'm always open in using that empathy throughout my talks, which is why it's very exhausting to do a few keynotes in a month, let alone a week, or like I have next month, 2 keynotes in the same day. That can be very jarring because it does take a lot out of you when you actually give it your all and lead with empathy. I think empathy and listening create connection between strangers. The fastest. I think it's the fastest way to create a connection, whether it's with your employees or your consumers or customers. Leading with empathy and authenticity drastically helps. But you have to be ready for that roller coaster of emotion. A specific instance I had was speaking at a corporate audience, maybe 400 people, 500 people. And one specific guy from the back was like, yeah, that's not true. And I could tell he had some angst in his voice. And I completely stopped the keynote. I was like, do you mind explaining? And he started explaining why what I was saying wasn't true because of a specific instance he's had. So I sat there with him in front of the whole audience and I just asked him questions and we started talking together and we actively worked that out through the problem solving that I was teaching. And it got to the point where he was getting emotional and he was like, man, I've never heard it explained like that. And the room was just silent. And then I continued my talk, but he came up to me after. He's like, in all my years of seeing speakers and trainers and coaches, you are the first person that, one, got me to think differently, and two, you saw me and you didn't just let that go to save your performance, you know? And it really reminded me why it's so important to lead with empathy and to care for people, because no one cares how much you know until they know how much you care. And if you can remember that, and you start caring about people more, people will start to respect you more. They will start to listen to you more. They will start to follow you more because they trust you. And you can't have trust without any empathy.
So true. I think doing some speaking, sometimes there's always that one skeptical person. And they are actually because they're going through so much injustice in their life and so much negativity in their life, when they go to that speaking, they're already armed with all kinds of bullets of negativity. Like, I'm gonna
absolutely
it, right. And I had some of those, and you're right, it's the moment that you actually take genuinely have a conversation with that person rather than like, yeah, makes a difference. Because
it really does. It really does. And it's not about trying to be right. Because my thing is like, I don't need you to see things from my point of view, but I want to create curiosity in your point of view. Because if you have a fixed mindset or you are so committed or certain, and that's actually in my book about change, the difference between certainty and curiosity is the difference between quality of life and not. If you are certain that things suck, you are going to use confirmation bias to confirm that things suck. But if you are curious as to how things might not suck or how we could make things not suck, then we are open to possibility. We have hope. We have chance. Given the opportunity of no chance and chance, I will always side with chance.
I got to celebrate. We just hit 1,000 people on YouTube. Oh, yeah. Thank you, YouTube. okay. So here's my questions for my speaking friends. What specific actions or platforms do you recommend for building visibility and credibility as a speaker, especially if you're just starting out?
So I always need to preface this with, like, we always jump to the sexy stuff, you know? We jump to the marketing, the branding, the fashion, like all that. That's nice and that's very important, but you can't market something you don't have. So if you do not have a profitable topic and an actionable message, no branding or platforms will help you ever. If you have a bad product or an unrefined product, you're not going to be able to market it. So you have to ask, who do you help? What do you help them do and why? I help who do what so that they can blank. If you can write that down on a piece of paper, that will help you really identify who you're helping and what you're helping them do. If who you're helping is not a profitable area and you want to make money, that might be an issue. You know, if I help 39-year-old men with their bunions, that's a very niche group of people. And you have to decide, is the problem profitable? Is it something that people are paying for? You know, if I help people learn about white paint, is white paint the real issue in their lives, whether it's the corporation or the person? Making sure it's a profitable topic and an actionable message is vital. Let's assume you have all of that down. LinkedIn is the number one place for social media in terms of finding potential clients to work with, in terms of building a speaker business. I have 150,000 followers across all platforms, mainly Instagram and YouTube. And if I could go back, I would have focused on LinkedIn 100%. There is a lot more monetization and productization on that. YouTube as well. I'd say YouTube is a close second for that. But in terms of direct clients, where they are when it comes to speaking, LinkedIn is it for the corporation association space. Now, if you are selling services like marketing services or anything like that, you have a lot more options on YouTube, TikTok, and Instagram. But LinkedIn is still fantastic for things like copywriting, solo entrepreneurship, email marketing, all of that. So just separate. If you are a marketing service-based speaker, you can go across all platforms. If you are a keynote speaker, I would go more towards LinkedIn.
Awesome. Thank you so much for doing that. Sister Susanna, did you hear that? So, because she speaks a lot about inclusion and belonging. And
that's what I speak on too. So that's fantastic.
Yeah. So you hear that? It's fantastic.
LinkedIn is it. I can tell you the conversations I've had. I've really ramped up my LinkedIn outreach the last 4 weeks. The conversations I've had and the events I've been able to like get a hold of through LinkedIn alone, there is a whole LinkedIn posting strategy. If you're able to learn basic copywriting on LinkedIn and have a simple outreach strategy, it's a literal goldmine. And I'm not selling a LinkedIn service. I'm just saying like it's actively what I'm doing.
That's how I found you, is through LinkedIn.
Yeah, that's how I found Mike. That's how I found everyone that I've connected with that led me to this point right now was literally through LinkedIn. And I've been fortunate to grow my followers like decently on LinkedIn. The difference is all the other platforms, like I have 7 million views on YouTube and like I grew to like 40,000 followers on TikTok in a month. But LinkedIn is the only place where I've grown to almost 10,000 followers in a very hyper-targeted group of disability inclusion and speakers. And those are all potential customers. So when in terms of value, I much more value the 9,900 followers I have on LinkedIn than the 68,000 followers I have on Instagram.
Yeah. Yeah. That is so true. You're right. I haven't even thought how many followers I actually have. I'm very picky on LinkedIn. I keep deleting people. I'm like, well, this one doesn't make sense. So I just keep deleting them.
And you get to decide how you run yours. That's completely fine. For me, it's more of I need the total quantity of people. And then I decipher who is what based on that. But that's the good thing is with social media, it's free.
Yeah.
And you can build your business how you want.
Yeah. With LinkedIn, I think I'm paying like $40 on the whole LinkedIn.
If you do Sales Navigator, it costs money, or the premium, it costs money. And I upgraded to Sales Navigator for that purpose. But for the longest time, I did it for free. The amount of free resources and access we have to create content for our intended audience in terms of business, also for personal, but there is a lot of access and resources that you have at your fingertips right now to get started with the stuff you say you can't get started with.
Yeah. It's a bunch of excuses at that point. Like what I just said,
Need step one. You know, you don't need step 27. You need step one.
What key strategies or tools do you use to engage and keep your audience attention throughout your speaking? So I've seen a speaker, I did an in-person speaking engagement recently. And, you know, the order of the presentation that you have, some people, which I love, like I don't know if you watch K-drama, but I'm like, whoa, in K-drama. So the very first thing that I've noticed that I get, I'm paying attention to marketing strategy that they have, like with K-drama, they tell you the whole story and the drama and the, you know, the life, like it's almost like a hero's journey, right? And then they start you with an ending, like, let's start from the beginning of how this happened, right? How do you create your presentation so that the attention is throughout? Because I've seen presentation where the beginning, I look at it as a third, first half, and then the end. Some people end okay. Some people really start strong, and then it dies down in the middle of that. How do you keep your audience throughout all the way to the end?
One word, intention. So anyone who's listening right now is going to get a $10,000 crash course in storytelling for free. So you are welcome. Kurt Vonnegut wrote Slaughterhouse-Five and a bunch of other incredible books. And in 1990-ish, he came up with The Shapes of Stories. He fed in over 2,000 famous stories in history and came up with 6 major shapes that all these stories have. And it's on a plot system, a grid system. So it'd be fortune or despair and then time. And it would be like man in the hole. So the person starts off neutral. He experiences trouble. So he's in a deficit and then he finds a way out. Now he's in profit. There are 6 main shapes of all stories. And if you can use those stories and those shapes and plot your own points of your story or your message, you will have a very successful speaking story. So that is one of the easiest ways. We want to take that a step further. Follow South Park's advice. Use the word but instead of and. And how I can explain this is like, I woke up today and I went to the refrigerator and I took my dog out and I came into my office and I opened up my laptop versus I woke up today, but I had to go to the refrigerator, but then I had to take my dog out. But after that, I ran to my office. It creates suspense. So that is a simple way to use one word to kind of create joint interest in going to the next piece. You want to take it a step further. We'll go into a very simple system. What, so what, now what? You want to keep people's attention? Use that. What's the issue? Why does it matter? And now what do I do with it? You have to have intention with how you're telling stories, and you have to have some sort of vessel to move them along. Those are 3 different categories of strategies that can make you go from a good speaker to a fantastic speaker and keep people's attention throughout.
I love that. So I took all of these conversations from your life to your speaking to mental health to emotional health to now our speaking. So I love this conversation. Thank you. Thank you for dancing around with me.
Of course.
But before we end this conversation, I have a couple of things. First, I wanted to make sure that I reciprocate the love and the time that you give us today. And that $10,000 information there. Thank you very much, guys. You got that. Okay. How can we help you? You have a book that already came out. How can we help you? What is the title of your book? Is it in Amazon, by the way?
Yes. Book is on Amazon, Anderson, Barnes & Noble. It is called The Art of Changing Course, 3 Steps to Get Unstuck and Solve Your Real Problem. So it helps people get unstuck, but it really helps people figure out how to manage change throughout their life, because there's so many people who want to change, they just don't really know how, or change happens to them without our control and we're wondering, how do we survive this? This book is a very simple process to help you fix and face the things that you haven't been willing to face. Very specific strategy. And the best thing you could do for me is get value from this book, get value from these concepts, and literally change your life for the better. That's the best thing I could know I'm possibly doing in the world, is helping other people.
This is the book right here, yes. Guys. I sent you the link. It's on YouTube as well. If you're on YouTube, there's the link, guys. Click on that link and literally read up. I mean, I have a lot on Kindle. So I will, does this have a Kindle version? I think it does.
It does. Yeah. It also just released the Audible version too. So that is there for if you're into audiobooks. Yeah. And if you really want to help me out, let's get those reviews up to like 35, 40. That would be fantastic.
You hear that? Reviews, guys. I'll be one of those for sure.
Perfect. I appreciate you.
I don't do reviews until I actually.
That's what I expect. I would hope that you review the book in a way that it actually helped you and you give your authentic review.
I want to actually provide reviews on for people to read, like what is something that you can extrapolate on this book.
Yes.
That you like or that would help you. Because what's the point of reading a book? Sometimes it's for entertainment. Sometimes it's for changing your minds. Sometimes it's a self-help book that will guide you throughout, right? And that's really our goal, is something, whether you're entertained or whether you're helped on something else. And so I usually will provide feedback only after I read it, because I think it's a disservice. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, that's fantastic.
Disservice. And then also, Chris, how do we find you? Do you have like a handle?
Yes. So everything is just at Chris Rudin. So whether it's Instagram or YouTube or LinkedIn, is just my name, Chris Rudin. And my website is chrisrudin.com.
Okay. And what else do you do for our community, Chris?
So I selectively work with speakers who want to grow their speaking business. So if you're a speaker who makes less than $5,000 per talk or less than $100,000 per year in speaking, I can help you get to the point where you can get to $300,000, $400,000 a year or $10,000 per talk. We have to work on messaging. We have to work on marketing. We have to work on those components of your business. But that's a hole that I see is not often filled in the world. Everyone wants to teach you how to give a TED talk, but no one really wants to teach you how to make money speaking and have an impact. That's what I do with my private speakers clients. So I never take on more than 5 to 6 clients at a time. But if you are one of those clients and you spend the year working with me, that's how you create a real speaking career, where you have a lot more free time. You make a lot more money delivering a lot more impact. And the fulfillment is insane when it comes to the speaker world.
Awesome. Seeking knowledge. Thank you. I'm buying it too. As soon as this conversation's over, I'm
gonna love that.
And don't forget, when you buy it, okay, review. I'm going to be watching for your review. So make sure you're there, knocking on your door. I'm like, where's Chris review at? What happened? You know what I mean? Like, I'm your accountability partner when it comes to that.
Accountability is a big part of my book, so I'm sure you'll enjoy that part.
Yeah. I think it, because I've seen mentorship where everything's like gung-ho, yeah, we're going to do it. And then we're doing it. And then nothing happens afterwards.
And you're like, what was the point of this? And that's, I had my experience with mentorship. And the first really good mentor I had, he told me the first 2 months, you're not going to make a dime with me. And I was like, oh, that's risky. You know, like that sounds rough. By the third month, I like 7x'd what I paid for the coaching. And I was like, ah, so you weren't lying. And I was like, this is the kind of coach I want to be, the coach that delivers. So that's my goal, to just deliver to the communities that I help. And if you are one of those people that are looking for help and are willing to start the conversation or get curious as to how I might be able to help, whether it's my book or my content or a one-on-one with me, my goal is to be the person I never really had growing up. So I'm here for that.
I love that. I love that you turn your pain into purpose and that you're helping the community. Not just, you know, you're talking about your diabetes and your disability, not just that, but people like myself and people like Susanna and people like Jesse, who's here, and Matt and Mike, right? We have our own purpose. We have our own lane, but that doesn't mean that we can't learn from you or from each other on certain things we need. So I love that you're open to that. This is usually my last question for the day. If I can find it, there it is. If this is your last day today on this earth, what would be your parting message to your current and future families in terms of living life, legacy, and impact?
Don't leave a legacy, live it. Don't hope that how you want to be remembered is how you are remembered. Live the way you want to be remembered. Live the life you wish you could have. I think everyone has an opportunity when they wake up, before they go to sleep, to say, if I was being my best self, what decisions would I make right now? What would my best self choose to do in this moment? How would my best self treat my partner? How would my best self treat my friend? How would my best self treat myself? If you live that way on a step-by-step basis, you're going to incrementally just experience better quality of life, both in your head and in your real life. So that's what I would want everyone I care about to think.
I like that. Live it. I don't even know what my legacy will be. I'll be my head. I have like, I was talking to my husband, you know, I've been married 21 years and I was telling him, I'm like, you know, I'm so scared because of what I do for universities. My brain has to think always constantly, right? Like I have adult ADHD and I have always lived my life in my head all the time. And I just spit it out with actions. And I told my husband, I wonder how to live life when my head is quiet. I've never had a quiet head. My head has like five people in it all the time talking. And I always try my best not to have the negative people talking in my head, because then my whole day is going to come to crap, literally. Right. So I'm like, okay, how do I shut it down? But what if it's shut down and I can't have my creativity anymore? Because 60% of my brain is structured and 40% is the creative side. But my creative side carries my structure most of the time, which is kind of weird. So then I'm like, what if I shut it down? And my husband's like, you might find it weird, but it might be good for you emotionally and mentally. So that's like what I'm struggling right now too. I'm like, should I take medicine? I hate medicine, by the way. If I'm not dying, like, ugh, grappling on the side, I would not take medicine. However, my migraine, I have to. Otherwise, I'm going to end up in the emergency room, which happened a lot before. And so now it's like, I wonder how will that be to get quiet brain, you know? So that's my struggle when it comes to legacy. Like, it's so scary for me to step into that realm. And then when it comes to speaking, I feel like most speakers have so much topic they can talk about, right? How did you manage to keep it at three?
Honestly, everything boils down to concepts. So I can explain this to you and anyone listening. You have the exact same story as me. You went through some stuff, you got over some stuff, and more stuff's coming. All things can be boiled down to universal concepts, and there's not many universal concepts. So whether you speak about mental health or marketing, you are speaking about overcoming adversity. When you can boil down the concepts into its simplest form, you can reach the most amount of people. you also have the ability to zoom in and zoom out. So you can be hyper specific. I can talk about mental health for neurodiverse populations, or I can just talk about overcoming adversity and include mental health. Being flexible with the way you hone in on your craft is so important so that you can zoom in and zoom out at a moment's notice. But at a certain point, you can't be Walmart. You can't be everything to everyone, because then you're really nothing. You have to focus on what you truly teach. And what is that you truly teach? You can teach a lot. I can teach 2+2, but just because I can doesn't mean I should. That's not what I truly want to teach. And that's not what truly matters to me. So don't think about what can I talk about. Think about what fulfills me to talk about. What do people come to me constantly for seeking? What do people seek in me consistently? That's telling. And if you have something like, wow, everyone really comes to me for this or for this advice, maybe there's something there. It might not be that they come to you for, but it might be the step behind it. Everyone comes to me for relationship advice. I'm like, okay, what kind of advice are you giving them? Well, I'm talking to them how to talk to their partner. Okay, so maybe you can teach communication, and that can be taught in schools. That can be taught in corporations. It can be taught anywhere, on social media. You don't always need to like hyper fixate on that one specific topic, but ask yourself, what is the question? What is the concept?
Damn, I've never been given a homework before. I usually give thanks, Chris.
I love that.
Freaking homework to do. Damn.
I love it.
I like that. I like that because I think I'm looking for 2025, right?
Yep.
I actually want to pivot and change. And I was talking to my sister, Susanna. I said, you know, most of the stuff that we do, we give a lot of scholarships to people because we want to create impact for them. But I said, I think we need to switch to nonprofit because we're keeping that mental health thing for everyone, but also the value, right? And it feels like there's so much negativity around. And I said, it's because we need to change our environment. When yep. we're surrounding ourselves with too many negative people, you're going to feel that negative energy. But I think if we switch our environment to move to somewhere else, it's so new, it's so fresh, like this is going to happen, right? Absolutely. What are your thoughts on that before I go somewhere else with this conversation? Yeah.
So I'm glad you brought that up, because one of the things I did want to mention on this call was, don't be so afraid to switch lanes when it's prompting you to switch lanes. Originally, I wanted to be a lawyer, you know, and then I wanted to be a veterinarian, and then I wanted to go into the military, and then I became an exercise scientist, and I became a personal trainer, and I thought that's what I was going to do. Before then, I thought maybe I would own a dance studio, you know. I went from personal training to therapy to speaking and speaking coaching and writing books. I've changed so many times, and people think, oh, that no, people are going to think that I don't know what I'm doing, or people are going to hate that I, no, it's one, it's what other people think is not your business. It's not your responsibility. And two, that's life. Life has chapters. Life is not just one chapter, and a chapter can be short or it can be long. It can be hurtful or it can be helpful. Don't be afraid to switch lanes, because it doesn't mean you can't go back. It's not like once you close a chapter that you can never go back again. We can always go back. I have a ton of books behind me. I can open up any chapter that I've already read. It's not a limitation unless you make it as a limitation.
World without limits. I was true to my title. And I love that, because I know people are always saying, I'm like, I have changed. And it's funny that you said that, because I took an LSAT. I wanted to go in Malibu for a law degree because my ex wanted to be a lawyer. But then I didn't have money to literally like get an LSAT review. He did. So he would go. And then on the weekends, I would read his book that he has from that, because I didn't have any money. So I just like read. And then we both took the test, but I scored higher than him. And he stopped. Wow. He's like, I'm not doing this anymore. Like, how do you do that? And I warned him, I'm good at testing. I'm good at grasping things, and I'm good at testing. So don't do that. And then one of the lawyer, I actually went to talk to a couple of lawyers locally and said, with me, like, those are my teachers. I took business law. And they're like, CJ, Not that you're not capable, but I don't think you'd be a good lawyer on the specific things that you want, because you do not have that face and you do not have that emotions. And let me tell you the bad side of law and being a lawyer, and then the good side of law and being a lawyer. And then you take that and information and go with it. And I love that, that I talk to them, because then I can manage. I'm like, oh yeah, no way. I would have slippers flying through that court system. Yeah. It's all a disrespect. I can't keep my emotions like that. And she's like, no, it's just, I'm just telling you from what I know you. So then I scrap that and I'm like, oh yeah, I want to be like, you know, most Chinese Filipino or Filipino in general wants to be a nurse. I'm like, well, I want to be a doctor, medical. I went there. And as soon as I saw blood, I fainted. I woke up in the room. They're like, it's been 2 hours. I thought you'd never wake up. Wow. What happened? I saw blood drawn. I was done, right? And so I knew that wasn't for me. I'm like, dang, what am I going to do? And my dad's like, go to, you know, IT, because I was good at computer software. Didn't happen. I had 4 more classes to get that. And I told my dad, don't worry, I'll marry someone who's in computers. It's fine. You know, just because my parents are Asian, right? I did, by the way. My husband's in cybersecurity. And then I was like, what am I good at? And then I thought, you know, my family's always done international business. Let me do that. From there, I became a dean and then podcaster. Like, what the heck happened, right? And so I love that you said that, because I could see that angle. And I also love that you are not saying niche down, because I hate people when they say that. Niche down to one. I'm like, I can't. My brain hurts just you saying that. But I can handle 3. 3 topics I can handle, right?
It's completely fine to do that. And like, you can use the Zoom. It's almost like the navigation on your phone or any navigation app. There are times where you have to press the minus, and there are times you have to press the plus. So you can see the bigger map or the smaller map, you know? Why do we act like we can only do one? Like, niche down to one, or go to where you can see everything. Life is dynamic. There's never a time where you only need one perspective, ever. You always have to plus or minus. Use that in your life. If you are too high level, you got to niche down a little bit. And if you are too tied in, you have to open up a little bit. Let's stop creating a one size fits all answer, because there is no universal fix to an individual problem. Use the skills that you have available. Don't limit the skills you have available for marketing purpose, because it sounds nice in a LinkedIn banner to say niche down to one. It sounds a lot less nice to say niche down when you need to, but also don't niche down when you don't need to. It's not as brandable, but it's much more practical, you know?
I love that. Gonna ask if I can use that. Look at that. There is no individual fix for a universal problem.
Yeah, there is. There is no universal fix to an individual problem.
Yeah, it's just crazy how people. I look at my sister. No niche. That's why I started Move Beyond Boxes. I never fit any box, and was never able to niche down. Well, I could have this conversation going, but we do have to end. Thank you so much for this.
Of course, thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. And let's get those book ready. I will keep a post as well, and I'll tag you in.
I appreciate you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Wait for me in a minute and we will end. Guys, thank you guys so much for being here. YouTubes, thank you. Thank you for being here. But I will see you guys later.
Are you a curious student, eager to learn new skills and make your mark in the world? Are you a professional seeking to advance your career and unlock your full potential? You need to be equipped with effective soft skills like communication, problem solving, teamwork, and more. The Level Up Academy by Doc Leland bridges the gap between education and employment through transferable skills training. Get the soft skills you need to be more effective at work.